amenities. BOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear reports from Dan Novak, Gregory Stockel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Jill Robbins presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of Benjamin Harrison. But first, here is Dan Novak.
The eastern Ukrainian city of Sloviansk has a severe shortage of water. Members of the city's shrinking population must fill water containers by hand at public wells throughout the city. As guns and rockets fire, people go outside only long enough to get water at the pumps. The pumps have been the city's only water source for more than 2 months. Fighting between Ukrainian and Russian forces near the city in the Donetsk area has threatened access to important resources. Residents have been cut off from gas and water for months. The water flows for now, but many fear that by winter, the city could face a humanitarian crisis once the pipes begin to freeze. Sloviansk sits just 12 kilometers from Russian-occupied territory. The water infrastructure was destroyed by the constant battles, said Lubov Mali. The 76-year-old woman gathers 20 liters of water twice a day from a public tank near her apartment. "It's a great risk for us, but what can we do?" she said. Only a fifth of the city's pre-war population of 100,000 remains. Heavy fighting continues only kilometers away as Russian forces continue their push to take over Donetsk, part of the industrial Donbas area. Local officials believe the water situation will only get worse once the weather gets cold. Locals fill their bottles with hand pumps or from plastic tanks at one of the 5 public wells. They then carry them home in bicycle baskets or wheeled carts. Molly said she boils some water for at least 15 minutes to make sure it is safe to drink. The rest is used for bathing, washing clothes and dishes, watering plants, and taking care of a lost dog. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky issued an evacuation order to all residents of the Donetsk region at the end of July. But Mali has not made plans to flee. "I don't want to leave," she said. "I will die here." Another Sloviansk resident, 75-year-old Ninel Kislovska, gathered water from a tank at a park on Sunday. She said the shortage had made her life much more difficult. She blamed the local government for the lack of running water. She said Kramatorsk, just 10 kilometers to the south, still had running water in homes. But that may be threatened once winter arrives, when the temperature drops to minus 20 degrees Celsius, said Oleksandr Goncharenko. He is the head of Kramatorsk's military administration. He said that places like Sloviansk and Kramatorsk, which also lack gas, had become hostages of destroyed infrastructure. Goncharenko said Kramatorsk will empty water from city pipes that run into unheated buildings to prevent them from freezing and bursting. He said he does not think gas would be returned before winter. Ukrainian officials are still trying to persuade the remaining people in Donetsk to evacuate. The war's front line threatens to move further west, and it will be very hard for people to live in the cold winters. Officials in Kramatorsk plan to build more public wells to supply the remaining population. But Goncharenko warned the water may not be of good quality. Mali has not made plans for what she will do once cold weather arrives. But after 47 years in her Slovyansk apartment, she will face whatever difficulty. "We are surviving by any means," she said. I'm Dan Novak.
New research published last week in the publication Communications Biology suggests the world's wildlife may be in more trouble than scientists have so far reported. Scientists have examined the status of more than 147,000 plants and animals. But there are thousands of species that scientists still do not know enough about to judge their health and safety. As a result, those species have not been included in the listing of threatened or endangered species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature, or IUCN, updates that list each year. Among those under-examined species is the orca whale, the fairy armadillo of Argentina, and 200 bat species around the world. In some cases, the lack of data itself is a warning sign. It suggests the species may be hard to find because its population has decreased, said a team of international scientists. They used data on environmental conditions and human threats to map the possibility of species death among those they examined. Then, the team looked at the 7,699 under-examined species. They estimated that about 56% were facing conditions that likely put the species at risk of dying out or extinction, said the study. The IUCN lists about 28% of species around the world as threatened. There are millions more plant and animal species that the IUCN has never looked at. Scientists estimate 1 million of them are threatened with extinction, said a 2019 report by the UN's Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Jan Borgelt is a writer of the report and an ecologist at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. He said of the endangered and threatened data-deficient plants and animals, many are species that live in small areas far from human population centers. He added many are in Central Africa, Madagascar, and Southern Asia. The state of nature could be worse than we realize if these predictions are true, he said. The study said the worst off are likely an under-examined kind of animal called amphibians, with 85% estimated to be threatened. Governments often aim to protect species named by the IUCN as threatened or endangered. Pamela Gonzalez del Pliego is an ecologist at the University of Évora in Portugal, who was not involved in the research. She said, studies such as this highlight where conservation resources should be allocated. I'm Gregory Stockel.
China announced Monday it would continue to carry out major military exercises in areas around Taiwan. Several rounds of air and sea exercises were launched by China's military last week. The exercises followed a visit to Taiwan by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. They were expected to end on Sunday. But China's Eastern Theater Command announced on social media Monday it had ordered more military exercises or drills in areas surrounding Taiwan. The new exercises were to center on anti-submarine drills and other sea military operations. So far, the drills have included missile strikes, warplane exercises, and ship movements around the Taiwan Strait. The strait separates China from the island of Taiwan. Chinese military officials have said the exercises were being held to show opposition to Pelosi's visit. China considers Taiwan a rebel territory. Chinese officials have said the government plans to one day reclaim the territory and may use force to do so. Taiwan rejects Beijing's territorial claims. The United States has observed what it called a one-China policy for many years. Under the policy, the U.S. recognizes the Chinese government in Beijing, but the U.S. keeps informal relations and defense ties with Taiwan. China has repeatedly criticized Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. It has also ignored calls by the U.S. to calm tensions caused by the military exercises. On Monday, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said China would continue to take measures to safeguard China's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Taiwan's foreign ministry condemned the continuing exercises as an attempt by China to increase tensions. A ministry statement called on China to stop the drills and pull back from the edge. In the face of military intimidation created by China, Taiwan will not be afraid nor back down, the statement said. Taiwan's defense ministry said Sunday it had identified a total of 66 aircraft and 14 warships taking part in the naval and air exercises. The island has put its own military on alert and deployed ships and planes to watch Chinese military movements. Taiwan's official Central News Agency reported the country's army would carry out live-fire artillery drills as a reaction to the Chinese exercises. Those drills were expected to take place Tuesday and Thursday in Taiwan's southern Pingtung County. U.S. President Joe Biden said Monday that he was not worried about the immediate safety of Taiwan, but he did express concern about China's ongoing actions in the area. "I'm concerned they are moving as much as they are," Biden told reporters in Delaware. "But I don't think they're going to do anything more than they are." I'm Brian Lynn.
waking up to a dove making cooing sounds, or watching a sparrow feeding, helps many people connect with nature and reduce tension. But fewer people know that birds are also the most cost-effective way of reducing the number of pests in their garden. Young birds love to eat insects, including aphids, whiteflies, cabbage worms, and cucumber beetles. Doug Tallamy is a professor at the University of Delaware. He wrote the 2007 book, Bringing Nature Home, How You Can Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants. He describes how a small group of chickadees, for example, could eat 6,000 to 9,000 caterpillars from birth through their first flight. That would clear out pests from any garden. Jessica Damiano writes about gardening for the Associated Press. She said, "You do not have to be a bird expert to get pest control effects that will help your garden. All you need to do is create a bird-friendly environment." Damiano says the answer includes using native plants to feed native insects, which will attract hungry birds. They could be different kinds of plants that provide berries, nectar, or seeds all year. The Audubon Society's Native Plants Database is an excellent source of bird-friendly plant suggestions for your area. When food is in short supply in the cold winter climate, leave flowering perennial plants out for birds to eat. As autumn leaves fall to the ground, place them under shrubs and trees to attract insects to feed the birds. And as the leaves break down, they will enrich the soil to give spring plants more nutrients. Set a bird feeder in the garden. Select one that comes apart for easy cleaning and that is built to keep the seeds dry. To avoid spreading diseases that can sicken birds, provide only enough seeds to last a few days and clean feeders at least 2 times a month. Choose high-quality seeds high in fat and protein, like unsalted peanuts or black oil sunflower seeds. Migrating birds need to store calories to prepare for their end-of-season trips. Suet is a nutritious cake made from animal fat and often mealworms, seeds, or grains. It can be hung in a feeder designed to keep out other wildlife. Place the bird feeder in a different place regularly to avoid the buildup of discarded seed shells and bird droppings on the ground. Remember to provide the migrating birds with fresh water for bathing in a container. It should be cleaned and disinfected every week. And avoid using chemical poisons to kill insects. They do not necessarily kill pests immediately. Insects that eat or touch the insecticide product can be eaten by birds, which can be poisoned as a result. I'm Jill Robbins.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Benjamin Harrison. His family name may sound familiar. That is because he was the grandson of President William Henry Harrison. That situation is unique in U.S. history so far. Harrison played an unusually active role as president at a time when most chief executives saw themselves as simply administrators. As a result, American writer and intellectual Henry Adams said, "Harrison was the best president since Lincoln." But most Americans remember little about him, except his connection to the previous President Harrison, who himself died after only a month in office. Benjamin Harrison grew up on a farm in the Midwestern state of Ohio as one of eight children. His grandfather was not the only famous political Harrison. His great-grandfather signed the Declaration of Independence, and his father had been a congressman. Young Benjamin Harrison respected these men and believed he had a role to play in history, too. He received a good education, and even outside of school, he read many books. His hard work and intelligence carried him to Miami University in Ohio, and then to a career as a lawyer. Along the way, he married a woman he had known since he was a teenager, Carolyn Lavinia Scott. The couple settled in another Midwestern city, Indianapolis, Indiana, and had a son and daughter. Over time, Harrison steadily built a career as a public official. But his political path was interrupted by the American Civil War. Harrison rose to the rank of general in the Union Army. He fought under General William T. Sherman and was one of the first soldiers to enter Atlanta, Georgia, after the city surrendered. Reports say that Harrison was an excellent soldier, but he did not enjoy fighting or find war romantic. After the war, he returned home to Indiana and continued his legal and political career. In 1881, he was elected to the U.S. Senate. But 6 years later, he lost his seat when Democrats came to power in his state. Harrison's loss of his Senate seat soon turned to a victory. The Republican Party nominated him as their candidate to run against Grover Cleveland in the 1888 presidential election. Cleveland's economic policies had become unpopular, and Republicans worked hard to support their candidate. They succeeded. Although Cleveland won the popular vote, Harrison won the Electoral College. In 1889, he followed his grandfather's footsteps all the way to the White House. Harrison's election was a major victory for his Republican Party. In addition to winning the White House, Republicans gained seats in the House of Representatives, held a majority in the Senate, and appointed several Republican justices to the Supreme Court. Harrison and other Republican lawmakers used their power to take action on issues at home and internationally. One act was to preserve forests. Harrison identified 17 protected natural areas and helped create Yosemite National Park in California. His government also established Ellis Island in New York to make immigration to the U.S. a more orderly process. Internationally, Harrison's administration sought to build ties with Latin American countries. His government established what would, in time, become the Organization of American States. His administration also increased the United States' global trade, as well as the country's navy. But, for the most part, the most pressing issues of the day were economic. The federal government at that time had an unusually large surplus. Some argued that the surplus was hurting business. In answer, Harrison's government placed a high protective tariff on imported goods. The legislation was known as the McKinley Tariff of 1890. Officials also aimed to limit the power of large corporations to control important markets in the U.S. Finally, they agreed to require the government to buy silver to use as currency. These actions pleased some of his supporters, but they may have contributed to the severe economic depression that followed Harrison's term. And in general, voters disapproved of the amount of money Republican lawmakers were spending. Although the country was at peace, the 51st Congress appropriated $1 billion. At the midterm elections, many lawmakers paid for all the spending with their seats. 2 years later, voters turned Harrison out of the White House, too. They returned Grover Cleveland to the presidency. Harrison did not express much disappointment. He had worked hard to become president like his grandfather, but he found he did not like being the chief executive. He said, when he left the White House, it was like being released from prison. Among U.S. presidents, Harrison does not have one of the most dramatic biographies. The facts of his life show an intelligent, disciplined man who tried to live by his beliefs. But he was not considered passionate about many things, except perhaps his enjoyment of nature. And he did not have an easy way with people. Even his staff called him the human iceberg, because he could be aloof and act coldly toward people. Yet Harrison's family brought some warmth to his administration. His wife, Carolyn, was known to be a lively, social person. She was the first to install a Christmas tree in the White House. Some of Harrison's grandchildren also lived in the White House. Harrison permitted them to play on the grounds with their pet animals. During Harrison's term, the family kept a goat, which the children called Old Whiskers. Harrison's time in the White House saw sorrow, too. Toward the end of her husband's term, the First Lady became seriously ill with tuberculosis. For months, Benjamin Harrison divided his attention between his wife and his job, and yet in the end lost both. After his term as president ended, Harrison returned to his home in Indianapolis. He did some work as a teacher and lawyer and kept a good public image in his community. He also remarried. His second wife was a widow herself, as well as his first wife's niece. He and Mary Scott Lord Dimmick Harrison had a daughter together. The child was only 4 when Harrison died from pneumonia at age 67. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
That's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.